Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org, as well as 1798part2.org, as well as republicreview.org. I hope you realize that you really are listening to the only show that actually has constitutional solutions. And, you know, if you've listened to the show long enough, it's not just about Republic Review. There has to be a few simultaneous efforts at the same time, and I've gotten into that before, but I'll just tell you real quick that there has to be, and I'll call it a stratagem, there has to be this onslaught of all sorts of demands of compliance to the Constitution that will really make it possible for Republic Review to move forward and work. The number to call in is 215-867-8255 or 215-TOP, that's T-O-P, Talk, T-A-L-K. I'm not sure if you know, but I think today is the birth of John Lennon, and I think in December is when his death is. I'm not sure about you, but I just kind of was thinking to myself, do I still celebrate the birth of John Lennon, or do I celebrate the loss of John Lennon, and or do I mourn over the death, or do I kind of, I don't want to say revel, but do I go, okay, because I'm not sure if you kind of understand the role that that the music industry and entertainers have had, but they have definitely been responsible in moving us down this communist paradigm. Many of the John Lennon and Beatles songs were actually embracing the ideology of godlessness, communism, and so forth. The song Imagine was literally that. Imagine there's no heaven. And so forth. And so anyway, I just started getting into a deeper thought of my own regarding John Lennon. Because when I was a kid, and the reason I'm bringing this up is when I was a kid, the first album I bought was a Beatles album. And my father gave me a huge lecture that really impressed upon me the importance of what I do with my money. Because basically the lesson was that if you spend money on supporting a lifestyle of a person who is promoting things that are detrimental to our quality of life, then all you're doing is helping them continue to promote, basically it's like giving, you know, bullets and ammo and weapons and so forth to your enemy who's fighting you. It's just, it's an oxymoron, if you kind of understand that. And at that young point in time in my life, I really didn't care, but I will tell you that was entrenched in me moving forward, and it was definitely one of those life lessons that I can thank my father for, and you can thank him as well, because that's obviously one of the things that has made me more conscious of the Constitution and so forth. So it is probably more due to my father than any other person alive that has got me into all of these things of abusing your ears with my obtuse wit and so forth. Anyway, let me move forward. I do need to do the obligatory groveling just because I want to make sure that anybody that is tuning in for the first time, if you want to get involved, you are more than welcome to contribute. If you've got a computer, you've got a phone, then you have two resources, either of which will help in contributing. But you have to have, I guess you have to have a computer or at least an email account so that you can email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. That way I can, all I need to know is what state you're in, county, that type of thing. And I will help you get started. If I do not have research already done, I'll get you started on it. If I do, I will give you what I've got and how to move forward. But anyway, you're more than welcome to join the cause. I would also tell you, because we are trying to get a lot of other things going, you need to join the Constitution Club. and that is at constitutionclub.ning.com. And just, it's free to join. You just go online and you can drill down into your state and into your county. That way you can become a contributor at that level as well, because I in talking to Keith, and I do want to get him back on so we can talk about the Constitution Club and how they're going to start engaging folks and so forth, and get into the plan, because I want you to be able to feel like, you know what, this is something I can definitely do, and it's not that big of a deal. They're probably going to get everything done. All you've got to do is cut and paste. I myself have been involved in other grassroots issues a long, long time ago. Whenever they gave me a script, I would either change it or write my own, because I was just that kind of person. I'm such a nonconformist. But with that, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org or the Constitution Club, which is constitutionclub.ning.com. I appreciate you tuning in, and definitely without your tuning in, the word would not be getting out and we would not be growing as far as a show goes. So continue to do so. Continue to get that word out. We do really appreciate the fact that we are growing. And I will tell you that going through the news, there's a little bit of news I want to cover today, but there is no sign that the federal government is going to ever relinquish their tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers that they've taken from the states. And so that means that's one of the biggest reasons why you do need to get involved. If you don't get involved, then they are going to continue to take away our liberties. And do you have a final liberty? This is probably the most important question you can ask yourself today. What is the one liberty that you will lose that will make you say, okay, that's it. I've had enough. They've taken and taken and taken. I am done. And as a matter of fact, you're more than welcome to email me that liberty that you're waiting for them to take. Because as soon as they take this one liberty, then you're done. Because my question is, while you're thinking about what that one liberty is, why is it that all the liberties that they've already taken from you is acceptable? Why? Why is it that you have to wait until they take more? Because it's just a matter of time when they take a little more, and then they're going to take a little more until there is none left. So while you're thinking about that, by all means, send me an email and let me know what that one liberty is that, you know, once you lose that, that's it. And I will hopefully be able to respond in kind and let you know, well, do you really think that losing these other liberties is good? But being what it is, I just think it's important that you put things into context. A big part of this show is not just educating, but a big part of the show is marketing. I need to market. I need to let you know what is going on, what has happened to your liberties, why you've lost these liberties, and so forth. And in doing that, it kind of helps you make those decisions to go, you know what, I've got to get involved. If I don't get involved now, then it'll be too late later. And that's the truth. One of the things that I do want to talk about, and this is kind of, it dovetails with what I talked about with Platonism. This dovetails with what I'm talking about in loss of liberties and everything else, and what the heck's going on in our society, the debasement of our society, and all of that. There have been 5 mega rich tycoons that have kind of been highlighted just recently as trying to buy this blue wave that's happening. And I'm not going to get into the very particular races that they're trying to inject money into. But if you do not start countering this. If let's say you live in a state like Washington, let's say you live in a state like Nevada, a light red or maybe a light blue state or a purple state, and you can actually contribute in a very close race that would literally help hands down a Republican defeat a Democrat incumbent or what have you. I am going to tell you that this isn't just for you, the individual. If you have a business, you need to start working in offsetting what these people and Soros and the rest of these rich elite people are doing. It is not a coincidence that people with that kind of money become enamored and a part of the left, because they recognize that the left is is designed, its intent is to basically shield them and protect them from you, the minions. And until they can take away our liberties, they have to put up with us. That's why they need to get these people into place so that they can live the life of opulence that only the elitist will ever taste. It is the level of Caesar. You know, I truly believe that if you could travel back in time and you talked to Caesar or you talked to the Pharaoh and said, you know, you need to, you know, look at these great inventions that we have in the 21st century. We've got, you know, hot and cold running water. And the Pharaoh will go, well, why do I care? I've got a slave that brings me hot water whenever I want it. I have slaves that do everything for me. See, they don't care about the conveniences. The conveniences were really for us, the middle class. The opulent, those who have had privilege and those who have had a status and a position in life, have always been able to live a life well above those of us that can really revel in, hey, this is great. We've got some new innovations with plumbing or electricity and these types of things. Because obviously they've never really had to work. They've always had either slaves or other people doing the bidding for them. So it's really important if we as businesses and we as individuals do not start stepping up and offsetting what these elitists are spending. We don't have to spend equal to them. There's a lot more of us. All we've got to do is all work together and contributing. I will be back more on this subject because I'm going to talk about Hagtop Hillary and what she is doing and how she is trying to stoke the flames as well. We will be right back after this. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so as we were going to break, I kind of shared what I have an enduring term for Hillary Clinton, if you didn't notice. And I call her Hagtop because I'm not sure if you ever noticed that. It just seems like she always has this hairdo that looks like a dirty mop or what have you. And I don't get it, but anyway, I just think it's a good play on the fact of her choice in hair designs. But anyway, Hillary and Bill, are on tour. And as a matter of fact, the Predator bill are out speaking on the Democrats and what they need to be doing to kick it up. And they're doing a very expensive tour because they're paupers. They want to basically charge a lot of money for people to come in to be in their presence. But bottom line is they're drawing a very similar message that is like what has been running rampant with Maxine Waters and the rest of them, basically saying that we've got to step it up. We have to start stepping it up. And the question is, when have communists ever been civil? What she and other leaders or spokespersons in the communist apparatus known as the Democratic Party are calling for is literally a Bolshevik revolution. Lenin leveraged heavily upon what he called the useful idiots, these people that didn't know anything. Today, we have millions of useful idiots being indoctrinated, 10 million a year jumping into the electorate or the voting pool for this Bolshevik revolution. And these idiots are our children in the current curriculum. It doesn't matter if it's public school or even private. They are all sharing very similar curriculums. I cannot assert that this is only happening in public schools, as I have said, because I've personally witnessed that this is also happening in the private and religious schools. I've actually had to shake my head when some of my friends have told me about their kids going to a religious school and the type of stuff that they are learning. They may still be able to say prayer, but some of the other stuff that they are learning is just reprehensible. And since the 1880s, the communists have been revising our curriculum almost on a regular basis to start and move us into a direction of teaching principles of godlessness and communism. I would go back to the 45 goals that W. Cleon Skousen identified in his book, The Naked Communist, and go through those and look back in the 50s what their goals were in moving society. And you would say, well, they've done all of that. Plus, they've done even more than that. What Hillary has said is, and basically I quote, "You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for and what you care about." She also said, quote, "That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength." Now, I don't know what this sounds like to you, but this does not sound like a doctrine of liberty. Or does this sound more like a doctrine of subjugation? How are Republicans out to destroy what they stand for? What they care about? What does she mean by that? Destroy. So let me give you something to think about, because what I want to do is I want to put this into context. Because bottom line, if you think about this doctrine of subjugation, what she's talking about reeks and sounds like Islam. Let me go back to the 1950s. The progressives, the secular progressives, injected, the communists, injected into our curriculum in our school systems, sex education. And the reason to justify doing this was to reduce teenage pregnancy. What ended up happening was teenage pregnancy rose. Did they say, oh, well, shoot, this really went wrong. Let's undo this sex education thing. It's lowering our morals. No, they didn't do that. What they did was they instituted more programs. So then they removed the Bible and the mention of Christ in the books of our school systems and prayers in school. Our nation became even more immoral and depraved. Did they at that time say, oh, well, shoot, this is debasing our society. We need to restore these things. No, of course not. They then began instituting programs that rewarded bad behavior and destroyed the traditional family unit through the welfare entitlement and giving fatherless homes more money. That was just one of the many things that they were doing. As crime and juvenile delinquency rose, did they say, this is bad, we need to reverse these programs? Heck no. So I'm having a hard time understanding what we are out to destroy when we are trying to restore the traditional family that built America. I'm having a hard time understanding what we are out to destroy when we are trying to resurrect and restore morality and virtue to America. Does Hagtop Hillary think we will be no longer allow them, or we would no longer allow them to be godless or immoral wretches? Like we're going to enforce our moral code upon them? I believe that they're misandrists and perverts who are trying to do and use political speech and thought that you can no longer call a person by their gender. They want to keep going down this path. And if you didn't know this, in California, you can't call somebody by him, her, or anything like that. And in Oregon, I believe it was a school teacher that actually got sued $60,000 because she referred to a person by their gender. What? That's what they're doing, and they keep on moving us. I've told you, they've never embraced the idea that we have to agree to disagree. They only use that as a facade until they can destroy you. They are committed to this destroying of you, and that means the end justifies the means. Rand Paul has been public in saying he's worried about assassinations, and actually his wife now keeps a gun by her so that she can protect herself. The right and liberty-minded person never thinks of assassinations, and that is why it's always been a foaming at the mouth communist, anarchist, or whatever that commits assassinations. McKinley was assassinated by a communist anarchist. Oh, by the way, Teddy Roosevelt was the one that benefited from that assassination. And by the way, he was also really disappointed and upset with the fact that he missed the Fabian movement when they came to Harvard about 5-10 years after he graduated. He was really upset because he missed that, and he wanted to be a progressive. And he was the first truly progressive president. They never really closed the full investigation on who killed McKinley, but you could definitely tell that Teddy Roosevelt clearly had machinations in moving this country towards a far more tyrannical, communist, secularist nation. And so that's why he started instituting programs such as the, Trust Busters, and he instituted parks and so forth. He was truly a communist. I will say this, with Trump, we are now actually seeing people getting arrested and tried for committing crimes during protests. That used to never happen before. They used to get away with that kind of crap. I was always scratching my head, why is it that these people aren't being arrested? It's like the Black Panthers in Philadelphia that intimidated people from being able to vote. They were never arrested and or tried. So maybe Hagtop is complaining that they're not getting away with crap anymore and that chaos and mayhem is a right that they're being denied. I don't know about that, but I will say this, that over the course of the last century, the good Christian right has constantly made concessions and compromised in giving up real estate. I ask you now to show me any real estate that the left has ever given up. They have been successful in moving the goal lines in their direction and against us to our demise. So I'm trying to understand what it is we're out to destroy. Does it mean that they can't be perverse and they can't do their wretched things anymore if we actually start restoring morality back to the school systems? We actually turn this nation around? That's something to think about. I just want you to think about that. And while you do, I've actually put it out there, and I want you to kind of ruminate on this, because most people have a hard time when I first say this, and all of a sudden it takes a little bit, but I think it'll sink in. We should be able to impeach, and we need to impeach all of our former presidents. You have to remember, when the Constitution was written, when you were no longer president, you became a plain Jane civilian. Well, after a certain point, past presidents or former presidents were given a permanent status. They were given Secret Service. They were given access to briefings, and they maintained a certain privilege of an assignment or a level of privilege. You cannot tell me that things are the same. And I believe that every single one of these presidents, because they have been working to undermine our constitutional republic, they should be impeached. They should be stripped of their salaries or their retirement. They should be stripped of their Secret Service. They should be stripped completely and be left on their own, because they do not deserve it for what they've been doing. Now, I will be right back after a word from our sponsors, and I got some really good ratification stuff for you. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back after this. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so before I get into the ratification debates, what I wanted to do was let you know, I don't really have much more on the impeachment of all the former presidents. If a former president has been doing things to undermine, like the Bushes have, as well as Jimmy Carter, almost every single one has been out, and definitely Obama has been out to basically undermine the sitting president and what we need to be doing as a nation in trying to pursue this fundamental change in moving America towards communism. And so anyway, I'll just give that some thought, ruminate on that, right? Cogitate, whatever. Anyway, I told you after McCain died that I wanted to give plenty of time for those who mourn to, you know, accommodate them, because I believe it's just in bad taste to literally land base somebody for for what they have done and how they have tarnished a brand as John McCain has. So coming up, hopefully I can do this week, but I want to do a special tribute to Songbird McCain, and so you'll definitely want to tune in this week. I'll maybe do this on Thursday, because obviously I can't do it today. And the reason I want to do it on Tuesday or Thursday is because these shows are actually rebroadcasted on the weekends. And so that way more people can hear some of the great things that John McCain has done. But with that, let me kind of move into the citations. And as I do, it is incumbent of me to ask you this question because I want you to think, are the words in our founding documents that I'm going to cite today, are these the words of deceit and lies? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive secular education system and the colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, bureaucrats, and so forth, have we been taught lies and deceit from these institutions and people instead of actually going to the sources? Because I will tell you that you will see a stark contrast when you start reading the founding documents from in contrast or comparison to what you hear and have read in school. And so first off, what I wanted to do, because I'm going to dive into the North Carolina ratification debate, because I wanted to play Mr. Iredell or read Mr. Iredell's comments on the limitations of the Constitution. And I think you'll find this interesting. But before I do that, I want to always start off with this whole slave issue, because North Carolina was a little bit slow in joining the Union. They had not ratified the Constitution as of yet. They didn't ratify it until, I want to say, November, December of 1789. And by that point in time, the new government had already formed. So they were like 6 months after the first session of Congress had started. So one of the reasons that kept them from getting involved was slavery. And so Mr. Iredell, or actually I'll start with Mr. Speight. Mr. Speight kind of spoke of this during the ratification debates in North Carolina. He says that the limitation of this trade to the term of 20 years was a compromise between the eastern states and the southern states, technically the northern states. South Carolina and Georgia wished to extend the term. The eastern states insisted on the entire abolition of the trade, that the state of North Carolina had not thought proper to pass any law prohibiting the importation of slaves, and therefore its delegation in the convention did not think themselves authorized to contend for an immediate prohibition of it. And so now you have a little bit of insight that North Carolina didn't feel that they were in a position during the Constitutional Convention to kind of, you know, contend or try to stop the prohibition of that. They didn't feel that they were, you know, directed by their constituents. And so they, you know, kind of weren't active where South Carolina and Georgia was. Now, I will say this, that when it came down to it, they actually wanted to ban slavery. If you did not know, they tried to ban slavery completely, that every person was to be free. And it was August 22nd when Pinckney of North Carolina, or maybe South Carolina, because there were Pinckneys in both, he came up to the Virginia delegates and basically said that if you make slavery a no-go issue where the states can no longer maintain slavery, then we are leaving and it'll be just you 10 states by yourself. And it was at that point the Virginia and the rest of the state delegates basically made a calculated error in accepting the terms of maintaining slavery. And that's when Mason really just was known for his every slave owner a petty tyrant speech. Anyway, Mr. Iredell talks, and he speaks a little bit about this too, and he says he begged leave to explain the reason of this clause. In some of the northern states, they have emancipated all their slaves. So I am trying to give you a little snippet or a snapshot of history. When people said that slavery was still instituted and still being practiced in the northern states, actually that's wrong. They were already freeing their slaves, and they had already basically banned slavery in most of the northern states by this time. If any of our slaves said he go there and remain there a certain time, they would, by the present laws, be entitled to their freedom so that their masters could not get them again. this would be extremely prejudicial to the inhabitants of the southern states. And to prevent it, this clause is inserted in the Constitution. Though the word slave is not mentioned, this is the meaning of it. The Northern delegates, owing to their particular scruples on the subject of slavery, did not choose the word slave to be mentioned. It's kind of interesting, you know, little view of how they, you know, viewed the Constitutional Convention. But what's really important here is, as I said, I believe it was a huge error that they didn't let those three states leave. Because what would have happened is they could have abolished all of the slave trade into North America. They could have done everything they wanted to do and then stood there with open arms to allow the slaves to, one, leave North, South, and Georgia, right? The Carolinas and Georgia. And then what are those states going to do? They had no diplomatic relationship or even an association via the Constitution. They weren't entitled to anything. It literally would have forced them to actually join. But what would have really driven them even further, as they would lose more and more slaves, would be this little thing called Spain in Florida. And this other little thing to the kind of to the west of them was France in Louisiana and so forth and up in the plains. Britain was also out on the seas and so forth. And there's no doubt in my mind that they would have literally came running back into the Union and they would have given up their slavery because they would have seen it actually evaporating in their hands over time. I just feel that the framers at that point in time failed to have the faith in doing the right thing. And I don't know why. I won't know until I can actually ask Madison and the rest of those men that were there. You know, obviously, I'm planning on talking to them about it, but maybe they can explain why they've made that compromise. All I know is that it just makes no sense. Anyway, back to Mr. Iredell. This is one of my favorite paradigms or my favorite metaphors of the limitation of the federal government. Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than they're given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true you have not expressly authorized me to sell the lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I could not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' You got to understand that the whole context of the Constitution was literally just encapsulated right there. Now, this is in context to the Bill of Rights. Because what they're trying to do is they were trying to argue why they needed a Bill of Rights to keep them from not exercising anything that wasn't listed. If you look at the Constitution as a power of attorney or as literally a contract delegating very specific powers, which is exactly what they did, I'm telling you, that's what they keep on saying here. That's all they did was delegate very specific powers. No other power could be exercised. And so slowly but surely, they started building these unconstitutional platforms, as I gave you earlier this week. These platforms are footings that John Marshall created using the Necessary and Proper Clause and the Supremacy Clause, allowed the Federalists, or I should say the Democrats and or the Communists, later on to start usurping states' rights, powers, and authorities. It's literally that simple. But I can see that I've only got maybe a few seconds left, and I've got a lot more of this quote to get to because he's actually going to get into a Bill of Rights and the argument about that regarding this power of attorney context. And so I have to, you know, kind of wait until the hard break comes up. But I just want you to know that the evidence is insurmountable. I mean, it is so immense that, you know, how can we ignore these things anymore and allow them to get away? Well, you've been letting us. There's nowhere in the Constitution that says we have to allow them because they've been getting away with it. I'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So Mr. Iredell makes this logical conclusion that because you gave him a power of attorney that authorized him to sell some land you had in one county, he basically creates this same argument that everybody else is making with the, you know, the Constitution. Well, I conceive that because you didn't particularly say I couldn't, well, then I think it's kind of implied. And that's just absolutely absurd. With the power of attorney, that is very explicit, and it's the same thing with a Constitution. Why would they think differently between a power of attorney and this Constitution that was enumerated? So he goes on and says, a Bill of Rights, as I conceive, would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of a great many, but an omission of some, and that after long, after all traces of our present disputes were at the end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded and the invasion be complained of. What would be the plausible answer to the government to such a complaint? Would they not naturally say, well, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established? We can judge it of much better by ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed that the people did not think every power to retain, which was not given, else the Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to charge an absurdity upon our ancestors, who have given such strong proofs of their good sense as well as their attachment to liberty. So long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection. if we had formed a general legislature with undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper, but necessary, and it would have then operated as an exception to the legislative authority in such particulars. It has this effect in respect to some of the American constitutions, where the power of legislation are general, but they are powers of a particular nature and expressly defined, as in the case of the Constitution before us. I think for the reasons I have given, a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but would be absurd and dangerous. And I think he paints a very good picture here. I think he makes the argument that kind of supports what I've, in my analysis of how we've gotten where we are today, I believe that the Bill of Rights that they created actually became a greater problem. In today, when you speak to people of the Constitution who really don't know, and they've never read it, the only thing they can recite to you is that they've got the right of freedom of speech. In other words, to them, the Constitution is the Bill of Rights. They do not understand it because of the Bill of Rights. Had we not had a Bill of Rights, it would have forced the states to maintain vigilance in the enumerated powers. And basically, as I posted to a South Dakota state legislator today, because he was commenting on, I forget the context of what he was posting, but I came back to him and said, hey, look, you know, it was about jurisdiction. And I forget what they were, he had something there that the Supreme Court would be doing something. And I said, okay, so, you know, that's no different than all of these other things. The Supreme Court has no jurisdiction of things that are not enumerated within the Constitution. And so I started pointing out to him all of these different quotations from Madison, Marshall, and so forth, and gave him all the facts and said, hey, look, when is it that we're going to have a real conversation about republic review? Because bottom line, the federal government has been dancing and waltzing all over the state's rights and abusing and violating jurisdiction since out the gate. So bottom line, what I'm trying to convey here, my friends, is the fact that the Bill of Rights really created this false security that we're protected. When, you know, over time, they started self-aggrandizing the roles of government. They created the Department of Interior without amending the Constitution and without that power being enumerated in the Constitution. And so they started getting away with it. That was in 1849. Shortly after that, they created the Department of Agriculture. They created the Department of Justice. They created a few other departments, and nobody said anything. And clearly, those things were not enumerated in the Constitution. They tried to create the Department of Transportation right out the gate under Madison, and then under Monroe, and then under Andrew Jackson. And all three presidents said, hey, you've got to amend the Constitution if you want to do this department, if you want to create this role and responsibility for us. But all of a sudden, from Marshall's rulings, they started making it easier down the road in the 1840s to say, you know what, we can do anything we think is necessary. We don't need to go through the Article 5 process. And so they started dancing on the Constitution. They have torn it up, and it is literally in rags and hanging by, I'll just use the old phrase, it is hanging by a thread. And that goes back to my question earlier. What is it? What liberty is it that you are afraid of, that you will lose, that will get you going, that will get you involved? What is that ultimate line? Well, shoot, if they do this, then I'm in. I'm going to be, you know, loading my guns and I'm coming a blazing. My friends, we don't have to do that. the good Lord gave us a constitution and gave it to us in such a way that we can, we don't have to fight. We do not have to deal with an armed revolution ever again. We have the gift of an enumerated constitution and also a contract. And so within that gift comes this inherent right to audit the said contract and be able to hold those parties, those people who are violating it, both present and past, accountable. And we can take back every single violation and pull that back to the states and get the federal government from spending us into oblivion. We don't have to fight a revolution. That's the beautiful thing about this whole Constitution and this contractual concept. That had to have been the insight of the good Lord. He had to have known that in these days that we would be living under such tyranny, that the Constitution would be torn in asunder and be literally laying in, you know, just bare, you know, bare facsimile of some parchment somewhere here and there. And bottom line, we can use the context of the ratification debates, because why? That's where they discussed what these lines meant. They clearly defined that. And I am telling you that the ratification debates, as I have told you before, are legally binding appendages to the Constitution. During the ratification and the negotiation processes of a contract, anything stated verbally or written down are legally binding. And God blessed us again with the fact that these men wrote this stuff down. They actually defined the Constitution for us so that we don't have to even speculate, oh, well, we think this is what they meant. No, it says right here what they meant. It is that simple. We absolutely are, you know, blessed with this possession of these definitions and clarifications of the ratification debates. What I have access to is very limited. If somebody wants to bestow upon me the great documentation work that the University of Wisconsin did with the DHRC, which is the documentation history of the Constitution, the ratification of the Constitution, which is the DHRC, again, I would love to get those volumes. I think they have like 18 volumes of documents where what they did was they took the newspaper prints and they took all the letters of those who were participating in the Constitutional Convention, as well as the ratifications and all of that, so that they could literally capture the sentiments of what was really being conveyed inside and outside these ratification debates and so forth. And boy, what a gem that was. And here's the interesting or the ironic thing. The University of Wisconsin in 1776 started going down this, not 1776, forgive me, 1976 on the bicentennial. They started this project in the documentation history of the ratification of the Constitution because they felt that this would be, you know, a real gem and a real gift to the Republic. But as they started doing this, because this was really big, a lot of people were talking about it, and then it kind of went away, or they kind of stopped talking about it, because as they started going through the ratification debates, they started realizing that we are not abiding by the Constitution as defined in these ratification debates. And so that's one of the reasons why nobody even knows about it today, and nobody even talks about it. And you can look at the University of Wisconsin is a very liberal school. They do not want these documents out. So that's why they make it really hard for you to get access to them. They are online, but you can only get them one page at a time. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. So please consider joining info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. God bless, and I'll be back tomorrow. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.